You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, formerly Rod's Pulse Podcast, number 96.
Baby, I'm amazed at the way you love me all the time. Maybe I'm afraid of the way I love you.
Hi, this is Blake Morgan, and you're listening to Rod's Pulse Podcast.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Glad to be back. That was a teaser from Maybe I'm Amazed by Blake Morgan. Blake has worked with Lenny Kravitz, Leslie Gore, Phil Ramone, among others. I thought I'd play his licensed remake of this McCartney classic in celebration of Paul's recent marriage. Besides, I love Blake Morgan's interpretation of this great song. I'll play the full song at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. You can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes. Just open up the iTunes store and search for Rod's Pulse Podcast. You can also subscribe via email and view my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Well, let's move on to my main topic today, Blackboard Mobile. Today I'll be interviewing Aaron Wasserman, director of the Blackboard Mobile division of Blackboard Incorporated. He's one of the founding members of Terribly Clever Design, a student-run company based in San Francisco. With the majority of the team enrolled at Stanford University, Terribly Clever Design worked with Stanford to conceptualize iStanford, a suite of iPhone, BlackBerry, and mobile web applications for fellow students and higher education in general. In July of 2009, Blackboard announced the acquisition of Terribly Clever Design. Aaron now leads Blackboard Mobile, a new division within the company, along with his student peers to continue the development of their mobile app platform. We'll try to answer the questions, what is Blackboard Mobile? What platforms does Blackboard Mobile support? Why is a native app better than a web app? Can you customize apps for your institution's implementation? And what's on the future roadmap for Blackboard Mobile? So without further ado, here's my interview with Aaron. Aaron, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me and my audience today, and very interested to hear about your experience and a little bit about the history of Blackboard Mobile.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be chatting with you and your audience.
I guess the first thing, for those in my audience who may not know, why don't you give us a brief rundown of exactly what Blackboard Mobile is?
Sure, happy to. I guess I should start with, you know, how it got started. Originally, a group of friends of mine and myself started a company called Terribly Clever Design. And one of the things that we were focusing on when we first started our company, we were students actually at the time in college. And one of the things we were focusing on was building mobile applications for higher ed. And specifically, our first project was branded iStanford. We were building just an iPhone app for Stanford University, which is where some of us happened to be going to school at the time. And, you know, over time, a lot has changed and, you know, we've evolved and our team has obviously grown. Now, known as Blackboard Mobile, what we do is we work with universities, both higher ed, professional ed, K through 12, all around the world to help them develop, deploy, and maintain various applications on iPhone, Android, and other platforms as well.
In honor of full disclosure, I'll tell our audience that here at the University of the Sciences, we are a Blackboard school. We are just moving back to Blackboard from Angel. We also are in the process of installing and configuring and rolling out Blackboard Mobile. So I'm certainly interested also from a personal point of view here. You mentioned some of the platforms that Blackboard Mobile supports, and that was one of my questions. I guess another thing that folks might be interested in is, why not just use the web on my smartphone? What are the advantages of having an app?
You know, I think that there are a lot of advantages to developing native software for these devices. And I also see advantages to developing for the web as well. And this has often been a large debate, actually, ever since we got started. I can tell you that, you know, what we were thinking when we were students building iStanford in our first go around at our product was that we really wanted to sacrifice nothing in creating the best possible user experience for students that were going to be downloading and using this app. And, you know, when considering maybe perhaps creating a mobile formatted website, obviously that was compelling in that it would afford a lot of flexibility in terms of who could use it. But what it sacrificed, in our opinions, was some really rich features that when the iPhone, for example, first came out, were sort of all of the buzz in app development. Things such as, you know, directly integrating with your phone's other applications, like your address book, your events calendar, things like GPS location, being able to find yourself using the GPS transmitters in your actual hardware on your phone. In addition to stuff like that, we were also really compelled by the notion of a native application and just how fluid of an experience it was to use that. All of the UI, for example, comes compiled with the actual binary that we package and ship to Apple that people then download and install. So it's a very, very efficient way of actually moving throughout the application, unlike a website in which everything you're clicking on is a link, and then you're loading consecutive web pages and all of the style sheets that come associated with that. A native application in all of its UI is, like I said, you know, hard-coded. So you're having to load only the raw data within the UI that has been developed. All of that sort of together really makes for, in my opinion, a really elegant experience on phones that have really powerful platforms for us as developers to work on. You know, and I mentioned iPhone and Android as just a couple examples.
Are there apps that actually store data on the phone, or is everything pulled in from the web other than your UI?
Well, with how we've sort of architected our product, there's sort of a mix of both. Wherever we see an opportunity to have something hard-coded into the application, we tend to do so. We sort of have have always had a design philosophy that we rarely want the user to encounter a scenario in which they have loaded a particular view in the application and don't see something. Even if there's no data to load, for example, we want the users to be able to at least see something with regards to our UI while they're waiting for perhaps, you know, the information to load. One example of something that we've hard-coded is, for example, the actual map. Most of our customers use as part of the suite of apps something called Maps, which allows students to, you know, look for buildings and points of interest on campus. Now, if you're comparing that to something like Google Maps, in which I think anyone who's ever used Google Maps on a, you know, mobile device can attest to, it can sometimes be frustrating, you know, that you open up the map and when you sort of drag around to look at different areas of the map, you have to wait for those tiles to load of the new map images. So you're, in addition to downloading the actual data points, you're actually also downloading the image of that map. And one of the things that we thought would be really, really great, especially for users who perhaps don't even have a great data signal, is if we hard-coded the actual map image into the application so that even if, say, your phone was on airplane mode, when you first launched the Maps application, you wouldn't need to download the map image. You would still need to obviously connect to your data network to search for buildings, but you could look and browse around the entire campus map freely because all of the tiles for that image are bundled in with the application. So when you download the application from the App Store, you're also downloading your school's campus map. You can browse it offline.
Yeah, that's near and dear to my heart right now because I'm actually helping to put together the data for our own map and gathering information from our campus about all the different buildings and their addresses and so on. So do you call them applets? I mean, we download an app, but there are different they're located on what you call the springboard. What do you call them, applets? What do you call the individual applications?
You know, there's different names for them. The one that I use most commonly that I think, you know, a lot of people use commonly is modules. But you're right. I mean, what you're downloading when you download a school's app, what you're really getting are a suite of sub-apps or modules or applets or whatever you want to call it. Modules is what I have used most often. When you're actually talking about the context of the different modules, I definitely have heard people use things like applets and apps.
What are some of the other popular applets or modules?
Well, you know, I think Maps is the most popular, and we already talked about that one. And I think that's just a matter of, you know, if you picture yourself as, you know, a student or just an end user of the application, you know, you're looking at information on the go. What could be more relevant than finding locations, you know, that you're potentially trying to get to? But I think that other ones that are really good for like quick capturing information on the fly, directory, athletics. We found that, you know, especially at certain times of the year for schools that have widespread athletics on campus, that module can be really, really popular and can have a long, not only a frequent open rate, but also a high sort of saturation in terms of usage time.
Another expectation we have is that it might serve the purpose of helping to market the university. Have you gotten feedback from your other clients about who downloads the app? Is it are they just students and faculty, or do the, you know, the parents and prospective students download these apps?
Oh, absolutely. I think that especially for schools that we work with who are actually putting forth marketing efforts to get people to download these apps, you see students is obviously a huge proponent, but you also see a lot of alumni, parents, general sort of community members who maybe are involved with the institution on a research sort of relationship, or, you know, in some sort of regards with terms of research, people that maybe just live nearby who are, like I said, fans of the athletics teams who are just trying to see like when different games are taking place or what the scores were. And, you know, another one that I don't think it's talked a lot about are other schools. People at other schools in IT or marketing who are sort of keeping tabs on schools that are sort of similar to theirs in terms of demographics for recruiting certain types of students are also keeping tabs on what each other are doing. So I think that lots of schools are downloading each other's apps just to, you know, sort of get a sense of their mobile strategies.
Right. Little competitive intelligence.
A little gathering. Bit of competitive intelligence. I think there's definitely some of that going on.
Besides the Map app, which we've talked about, what are some of the other ones that are most popular? I assume you can get analytics on which of the modules are being used. So I guess it's a two-part question there.
We do actually provide analytics to our customers that would give them really great insight into which modules are being used most frequently and other, you know, interesting characteristics about them. I think that, you know, and as we already mentioned, Maps is one that just gets used all the time. There are seasonal ones like courses, and you know, courses is a really great application. It's very near and dear to my heart because it sort of solved an experience problem, is how I would label it for me when I was a student at Stanford, in that it was really confusing and difficult to sort of navigate the waters of the Stanford course bulletin. And, you know, it's only because there's so many courses and so much data and so many ways of looking at that information that I think that the courses module is a surprising one that gets looked at a lot by students in these mobile apps, because it really breaks down the user interface into something that's very simple and digestible. And it really lends itself well to the type of user who perhaps doesn't really know what they want to take the next quarter. And they're just interested in sort of browsing what's available. I think it really lends itself well to that type of user. But obviously, that's going to be seasonal, as I mentioned.
So we've talked about Maps and courses, the course catalog,
yep.
Sports. Are there any new modules that are in development or coming down the pike? And is it possible for us to develop our own custom module?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that is, I think, going to be really interesting as this sort of industry continues to evolve. We, on our iPhone and our Android platforms, have what we refer to as the BB Mobile SDK. And really what that allows schools to do is to develop their own, well, I guess, should we go with applets or modules? It allows them to develop their own modules that would sit on the Springboard alongside the ones that we just talked about, you know, athletics courses, Maps, things like that. And I think that that's really interesting because it really enables the school to grab hold of what functionality they want users, their particular end users, to be able to have access to. And we've seen some really actually interesting creative things come out of this from certain clients. And I could talk about some examples if you'd like, but what I really like about it is that it makes the platform a bit more open. It makes them rely less on us to develop their vision. They have control over it as well.
And I think from our standpoint, we have a fairly small IT group here. And if we were to develop a custom app, maybe for one platform, that would be one thing. But to be able to do it for several different platforms all in one shot is, I think, a real plus. Is there anything else you can tell us about your future roadmap for Blackboard Mobile?
There's always some degree of us being on our toes when we're talking about our roadmap, just because this industry changes so drastically all the time. I think, you know, obviously something that's on the top of everyone's mind right now is the pending announcement that Apple is expected to make about the iPhone 5 and in turn about their next release of the iOS platform, iOS 5. And our team definitely has some cool stuff in the works that we're planning on announcing in conjunction with Apple's announcement for iOS 5. So we can expect to have more for you on that probably in the next week or two.
Ah, sounds good. That's exciting. Speaking of the mobile devices, of course, the iPad has made a big impact, and everybody and his brother, including now Amazon, is coming out with an Android-based tablet. Are you working on developing for that form factor?
Yeah, we've already taken some stabs at tablet deployment. And, you know, with our mobile learn platform, I think we have developed something really, really cool for the iPad in particular. When we're talking about tablet deployment, you know, really what has been on the top of our team's mind is thinking about the differences between when specifically someone takes out their iPad, for example, rather than going to their iPhone or their Android. And what we've sort of hypothesized is that it's in a little bit more of a stationary setting, and it's going to be a little bit more engaged of an experience. It's probably going to last a little bit longer. The tasks that someone is going to be trying to perform are going to be a little bit more involved, rather than just trying, for example, to look up something really quickly like you might do in maps or athletics. With Mobile Learn, for example, we sort of took this approach that maybe people are going to actually be trying to, you know, learn something, or maybe they're trying to read something for a half hour, you know, 45 minutes. And so we really wanted to make sure that whenever we've talked about developing for something as cool as an iPad that has so much extra screen real estate, that we were enabling people to be able to do that, to be able to spend more time in the application easier, and perhaps even to send information back rather than just being consumers of information. On the Mobile Central front, you know, it's the same story. We've done a lot of talking and thinking about how Mobile Central might work on the iPad. And I think that there's so much that we can do. And I look forward to progress that our team might make in the upcoming year on that front.
Well, I think we're almost at the end of our time. I think you're really at the forefront of this whole mobile story. So I expect to see you're going to have a long, prosperous run on this. And I wish you the best of luck. Thank you again for speaking to me and my audience.
I appreciate your time. Thanks for having me. It was really good chatting.
I hope you enjoyed the interview and learned more about the advantages of Blackboard Mobile for your school. U-Science's implementation of Blackboard Mobile Central is coming this fall. Please stay tuned for Maybe I'm Amazed. Until next time, have a great week. And hung me on a line. Maybe I'm amazed.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.